The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hi, Dr. Ray. I love your show.
Let me show you what it looks like to be a holy person, and maybe you'll want to be holy like me.
You just patted yourself on the back.
You seem like an honest guy.
But you're a psychologist. Do you have some advice?
I don't know. I'm not going to tell you what to do.
You're my second favorite Italian person.
I think you have a way of making people feel relaxed.
She needs to feel the consequences of being a jerk.
You know, I was looking for a deeper answer.
Obviously, I'm a failure. Obviously, I'm inept.
Yes. You are awesome. Keep up the good fight, my friend.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Andrew, I don't know if we can keep that aspect of the bumper. Keep up the good fight, my friend. A little bit hostile there, you know? Got to watch the language. Maybe she could have said, keep up the good journey, my friend. Keep up the good reaching out, my friend. Keep up the good empathy, my friend. But yeah, keep up the good fight. I mean, has anybody complained about it yet? No? All right. I thought my wife would call in. Nice to have you here, Dr. Ray Grandy. Program The Doctor Is In. I am delighted and privileged. Major privileged. I know that sounds like I'm just kind of schmoozing you, but it's true. It's true. I get a lot more out of the show than you do, you people do. I can hear people saying, well, that says it, that's for sure. Okay, easy. But I do. This is a privilege to be on the air here for some 20-plus years. I'm still shocked that they went after and got me right out of high school. Very, very kind of them. My producer man is Andrew Krucek there in Ann Arbor. And our call screamer today, as is the case most of the time, Eric Dumont. Between Eric and Andrew, they have four children. And Andrew's daughter, Audra Rose, yeah, she's a young adolescent. Yep, he's going to have to start listening to my program, whether he wants to or not. He'll be desperate enough. I remember when I was back at the mental health center, my supervisor, I'd just come into the internship. I said, so Harvey, do you see adolescent girls? He goes, no. God temporarily takes their souls. All right, exaggeration, but that was how he viewed it. Number to get onto the program, 877-573-7825. 877-57 equal. Multiple reasons to get onto the program. You have a question or a circumstance, something in your life that you just want to bounce off of me. You know, obviously, we're not going to do therapy here. I was in the office this morning for several hours, so that's where you do therapy. You don't do it here. You don't diagnose here. And certainly, if you're seeing another therapist, I'm not going to comment on what you're telling me that the therapist said or what you said to the therapist. But we can put our heads together, see if we can come up with something. Now, you have to get past Eric Dumont. But he is not really, when you think call screener, you think, well, he screens the calls. He's got a very, very tight mesh, and it's hard to get through. Are you kidding me? Eric's call screening is like a picket fence. He pretty much lets everybody get through. I think he does it on purpose, just to see what I'm going to do. But he's there. And sometimes people call in to help other people. The implication being, Dr. Ray, maybe you ought to consider this, Mr. Answer Man. Anyone with a pulse gets on you. Pretty close. Anyone with a voice. But I'll tell you what does take them down. It's not so much the content of what they ask. It's the quality of their phone. Have you noticed that? Much more often, you don't get calls on the air because the phone's bad, or it's breaking up, or it's sick. And if there's going to be static, I want to be the one to give it. Don't want to come from that direction. So the number, 877-573-7825, 877-57-EQUAL. People have asked, what is that 57-EQUAL? Well, as I look at my phone here, and I put up the, hold on there, see, let me go to the call place there and see what it says. Keypad. Equal is, the E is on the 3. The Q is on 7. U is on 8. A is on 2. And L is on 5. 877-573-7825. But it's easier to remember equal. My second book was a book titled Back to the Family. I did it in conjunction with Akron Children's Hospital. A friend of mine, David Icke, orchestrated. He had an idea. He was vice president of marketing at the hospital. He had an idea that he was going to ask National State Teachers of the Year in all 50 states, can you describe some very strong families that you have come across in your years of teaching? And obviously, to be a State Teacher of the Year, you have to love the profession. You have to be pretty much involved in it. So he figured they were pretty good identifiers of some solid families. And it turned out very much so. These families had a lot of so many admirable characteristics in their family life. And the book more or less taps into some of their ideas regarding discipline, regarding communication, regarding religion, regarding marriage, all stuff. It was a kind of a broad range look at parenting. And wherever possible, we interviewed the kids. Some of the kids were pretty insightful. The older ones, say maybe 13, 14 on up. We asked the kids at one point, this was under the communication chapter, I think it was, what do your parents do that most bothers you, that most frustrates you? Keep in mind, these were not families that were pathological by any stretch. We didn't hear, oh, I just hate when the cops come here before breakfast. Oh, my mom, she hurt her arm, so she can't really throw plates at my dad like she used to. She has to throw with her left arm, and sometimes she misses. We didn't hear anything like that. You know what we did hear? It's going to come as no surprise to those of you who have teenagers. Lectures. They didn't like lectures. Now, what is a lecture? We grown-ups have a very broad-based definition of lecture. To us, a lecture is anything that, say, goes on for more than 24 minutes or is repetitive 6 to 8 times. Then we're getting into lecture turf. The kids, a lecture is anything that is a compound sentence that is more than 7 words. That begins with, you know, young lady, when I was your age, we're going to have a little talk about this, young man. Now, am I saying don't lecture? Of course not. Of course not. I'm a parent. It's part of the passage, being a parent. But I think there's a certain desperation to lectures that can creep in. We so much want the kids to understand why we do what we do. The reasoning behind our Neanderthal decisions as they see it. So we explain. Now, we want to get through. And maybe one explanation from one angle isn't enough. So we try different angles. And we recall our own childhood. And we draw moral parallels. Now, there's nothing wrong with this. But it does follow the law of diminishing returns. There comes a point in that lecture, usually somewhere around the 90-second mark, where they're blanking out. Or they're thinking, and you can see it in their eyes, lecture number 602. When I was your age, I was grateful for what little I had. You see it. And part of the reason we go on is because we think we're not being understood. They're not getting this. Or maybe it's a unique piece of misconduct. It's not something they routinely do. Kind of comes from left field. So you figure, all right, we better talk about this. And again, do not mishear me. I am not saying as a parent, you don't talk about these things. What I'm saying is, and especially if this is stuff that is recurrent. For example, he has a tendency to belittle his little sister. She's 11. He's 14. He takes every chance to poke at her. Now, you've talked about this with him, and you hold him accountable for doing this, but you feel compelled every so often to launch into a lecture again on why this isn't good. Lecture 1 and 2 made yourself heard. Lecture 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 is fading. He's enduring it. I wouldn't go so far as to say you're wasting your breath, but it's close. It's very close. And I know this would be hard to believe, but I don't really like wasted words. But then, Dr. Ray, you shouldn't have your radio show. Okay, easy. Lectures come out of the need, the desperate need to make sure they absorb our moral lesson, our social lesson, what we're trying to teach, so that when they're 23, they don't have to learn the hard way. And I got that part. I truly do. But at some point, you keep it short and sweet. You make your case. I'm not letting you go to the mall because you're 13 years old. It's unsupervised. And I know that your friend Snake is allowed to go along with his brother Conan, but I just don't think it's smart. Now, you've explained it. When they try to get you to prolong your lecture, it's not that they want to hear more reasons so that they can finally say, well, Mother, thank you. You know, had you stopped explaining this to me at the 24-minute mark, I don't think I really would have understood. But because you kept on for another 18 minutes after that, I saw the light so clear to me now. Pick and choose your lectures. If you've been over the same subject many times, a good rule of thumb is make each ensuing lecture a little shorter. Watch out for the cues that they're glazing over. It's a deer, and your headlights are on bright. You're not getting there. And in fact, this is one thing you might want to ponder. Are you actually losing ground? The more lectures, probably the less likely the lectures are absorbed. 877-573-7825. 877-57-EQUAL. That is the number to call to get onto the program. I would be delighted to hear from you and talk to you. I'm Dr. Ray.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically own shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
Isn't it awesome that we today do not recognize his presence in the Eucharist? Is it because we really don't go to him in humbleness of heart and say, Lord, I don't believe, help my unbelief. Lord, I want to see you. I want to recognize you. I cannot live without you. Are we saying that?
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Steve and Janet Ray here, announcing we are back in the Holy Land, ready to introduce you to our favorite places in the world, the land where God walked. Mass at the most holy sites, pray the mysteries of the rosary where they happened, and experience the Bible in vivid color. We have led over 100 groups through this land, sharing the whole story of salvation. Of all the pilgrimages in all of the world, this is the one you should not miss.
Find the Ave Maria Radio travel tab at avemariaradio.net.
Looking for practical, faith-filled help to build the marriage you're longing for or become a more confident Catholic parent? I'm Dr. Greg Popchak, founder of the Catholic Home app. That's Catholic H-O-M for Catholic Households on Mission. The Catholic H-O-M app gives you daily coaching, creative tools, and real-life support to help your family thrive. Subscribe to the Catholic H-O-M app today and discover the path to a more rewarding, faith-filled family life.
Dr. Ritter, ending my wife's most childish child. Very nice to have you. Get to your calls right in a moment here. I want to preface this call with a little experience I had with my own son, who was probably about 4 years of age, and our caller will know who I'm referring to in this call. My son was about 4 years old. We were visiting my uncle. He got tired of listening to two old people talk. Ew. So he decided he was going to start spinning around. Arm flapping all over the place. Looked like a figure skater, only with Andrew it wasn't a triple Lutz, it was a triple klutz. Well, on about spin number 5 or 6, he spit at my uncle. Now, it was a dry spit, I could tell. You know, you get to know these things when you're a guy. What's a wet spit? What's a dry spit? And it missed. He missed his target. So, of course, he had to sit. I said, Andrew, you're going to sit, and then you're going to tell Uncle Rich you're sorry when I let you get up. Well, he just wasn't ready to say sorry. That wasn't going to happen. So we left. He basically sat there the whole time until we left. Got home. I said, Andrew, you're going to call Uncle Rich? I'll call him.
Okay.
I called. As soon as the phone touched his ear, he didn't say a word. Nothing. He just stared at the receiver. I said, well, Uncle Rich doesn't look like he's ready to talk yet. Andrew, keep sitting on the steps until you're ready. And 5, 6, 7 minutes later, Andrew says, okay, I'll tell Uncle Rich sorry. All right. Come on, son. So, called Uncle Rich. Andrew said, sorry, Uncle Rich. Okay. I know those words are hard for you to spit out, Andrew, but you gave it a good shot. Well, David's kid, who spit on another kid, and Andrew Krucek pointed out that it may just be possible, an explanation for this, is that this kid was actually impugning me. He said something like, my mom listens to Dr. Ray and I don't like him at all. And David's kid spit on him, which, you know, I appreciate the kid sticking up for me or spitting up for me, but I don't know if that's exactly the explanation. It's probably just impulsive. Hi, David. Thanks for the call.
Hi.
Your kid spit on somebody, huh? Hey, little boys spit, man. They spit all over the place. Did he get in trouble? Get in trouble at preschool?
Yes.
So, what'd they do?
Well, they're suggesting all sorts of. I mean, it happened twice. It happened once in September, and it happened once recently with the same other child.
Well, what are they suggesting?
Well, they're suggesting looking at other programs. They're suggesting going to a private. Like psychology classroom to observe
what?
The child. Yeah. Right,
wait.
Exactly.
Okay. Now, a lot of times when preschool programs do this, it's because there's an ongoing discipline problem, and the spit was just the more gross of the discipline problem. But have they complained about any other behavior other than the two spits?
No.
Okay, that's the first thing I would ask him next time you go pick up your son. I'd say, is he cooperative with you?
Yes.
Yes, he's very cooperative.
So how are you interpreting, please help me out. You're not challenging him, you're not trying to pin him into a corner. How are you interpreting this? What do you think it means? Now, David, I got to tell you, I am a bit biased against some of these preschool programs that heavily over-psychologize kids' behaviors. I want to hear what they think. Now, my guess would be that this kid probably is a bit of a provocateur for your son. I imagine he hasn't spit on anybody else, right?
Yeah, I don't know that part, but I guess the heart, the root of the question is what kind of discipline is appropriate for the four-year-old? Is it?
Well, I'm getting to that.
Yeah.
I'm getting to that. But here's okay. Part of the reason I've prefaced all my remarks with this is because the behavior, certain behaviors look more abnormal, if you will, than others. You know, say your son would have stuck out his tongue at this kid. I'm not sure they'd be reacting like this. Or say that maybe he would have called him a name. Like my little grandson's approaching 3 years old, and some kid at preschool said something to him, and my grandson said, "Ugga bugga, spray water on you." And that was his vicious, vicious response. So I suspect that there's something about spitting that sort of hits them the wrong way. That's why I'm saying, well, we got to be careful how we don't overinterpret what he did. That's one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What I would do, if it were me, it isn't necessarily what's appropriate. It would be what's the intensity of your discipline. Now, by that I mean, some people would say, well, I'm going to sit him on the steps when he gets home for 4 minutes. Okay. But if you're panicky about this happening again, and then your little guy getting booted out of the program, what I would do is something like, okay, what's your little guy's name, David?
Well, I'm nervous now. I don't want to tell
okay.
you his name.
All right. Let's give him a name. Let's see. Mark Spitz? Mark Spitz is hero? Never mind. Okay. So given that, I would tell him, you know, son, what you did, you can't do. You can't do that. So the next five things you ask for is going to be no. So if he wants his juice cup, that's no. You spit on the kid. If he wants to stay up, you say, no, you're going to have to go to bed early because you spit on the kid. In other words, it isn't so much the spit-appropriate discipline that you're looking for. It's more the spit-message discipline. In other words, son, yeah, what you did was wrong. Shouldn't have done that. And I'm going to have to make it expensive for you so that we can make it likely that it won't happen again.
Mm-hmm.
But before I did all that, I would... Well, not before. You choose the timing. I would definitely sit down with the teachers and just say, please help me understand how you interpret this and are thinking we should look, one, for another program or two, for counseling. That just blows me away. First of all, counseling doesn't work with a four-year-old. And second of all, what that implies, there's some kind of abnormality to the kid. That just
which is not the case,
right? Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I could see it if they're using it as an excuse. We've been putting up with this kid all year, and that was the final straw. Okay, I got that. But no, if they're saying he's the delightful little boy, and a couple of random episodes with the same kid, by the way, and it's kind of like football. The guy who punches second gets the flag thrown because they didn't catch the first guy. I got to believe they didn't catch this first kid. So that's my situation there, and I'm sticking to it. So I would do that. I'd do a multi-consequence approach, kind of lend weight to your discipline. Oh, boy. I'll tell you, that frustrates me, David. We're so over-psychologized in our culture. Little boys do stuff like this. It's not good, but you deal with it. Dr.
Father Benedict Rochelle.
Some great people have shown respect for God. Can I read you a little quotation from Albert Einstein, who many times showed a great respect for religion and was one of the great admirers of Pope Pius XII for his stand against the Holocaust during the Second World War. Einstein wrote, "The fairest thing we can experience is the mysterious, is the fundamental emotion that stands at the cradle of all true art and science. A knowledge of the existence of something we can't penetrate, of the manifestations of the profoundest reason and the most radiant beauty, which are only accessible to our minds in the most elementary form. It is this knowledge and this emotion that constitute the truly religious attitude." Oh my, so beautifully said.
The people you know and trust are on EWTN.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
We just did our parish mission a couple weeks ago now, and I suggested that in the course of the mission that we do something like a little mini spiritual assessment of our lives. I don't have to show this to anybody, but a great chance for us just to, with real honesty, just between us and Jesus, ask ourselves some questions. First question, given the fact that half of Catholics don't think God is even personal, would be to ask ourselves that. Do I think God is personal? And then to ask myself, do I think a relationship with Jesus is possible? Do I have a relationship with Jesus? And if so, what's it look like? And then perhaps a little bit more awkwardly or painfully, to ask Jesus, from his perspective, what's the friendship that we have with him look like? How would he describe our friendship with him? That might be a hard conversation to have.
Thank you so much for keeping me company. Appreciate it so very, very much. Dr. Ray Grandy here asking the question, what if there were no hypothetical situations? Just pondering that one. Pat from Missouri. Hi, Pat. Show me. How are you?
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
So, I have an old boyfriend that is wanting to keep in touch, and this has been going on for a while, but for the last 2 years, I've cut communication with him because it doesn't seem prudent for him or I to do that. I really have no desire to have any kind of contact with him. He is suffering from PTSD, and I suspect that some of this reaching out may be related to that in some way, and I'm just not sure how to proceed. I blocked him, but I do get phone messages from him, and he's like begging me to call him, and I really don't want to. And so I just don't want to be cruel if the PTSD has a different way of approaching things. I don't know. I'm just pretty much at a loss.
I wouldn't go so far as to say because he was diagnosed with PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, that this is the reason for his behavior toward you. It may be just part of a broader picture that you have sized up and said, this relationship is not what I want. And he has a whole bunch of other things that he's dealing with, and I don't want to be immersed in that. Is that safe to say?
Yes.
Okay. So if you're asking, what do I do here to not have contact? That's pretty straightforward. The answer is, don't have contact. If you're asking, which I think you really are asking, how do I let him down easy and somehow find the words to make him understand why I'm doing this so his landing is soft as opposed to all the things he's struggling with and now I'm just one more on top of the pile, That's not so easy to answer. Because I think, Pat, what is likely to happen is that you say, I don't want to be cruel. Well, you're not. Are you? Okay. Raymond, phrase your question. Would you think it's cruel to not continue to have contact with him? Is that cruel?
No.
Okay. So how would you be worried about being cruel then?
Well, I guess it's his perception of my not having any contact. I did, about 2 years ago, and this is when I stopped all communication with him, I did send him a lengthy text explaining to him, I have moved on, I'm married, you're married, this is not prudent for either one of us, you know. And trying to explain to him, I wish him well, we had a great time, but, you know, that was 45 years ago, 50 years ago. And it didn't seem to get the job done. So that's when I cut off. After that, I just said nothing more. But it weighs on me, I guess, because of the PTSD that...
Okay, so you think this is not a quote-unquote normal situation. In other words, if he were just a jerk, you'd say, you know what, he's a jerk. But if you're thinking, well, he has some mental issues, right?
Correct. Perfect. And am I making it worse is what my thought might be.
Well, I think that he's probably going to force you to be more firm because he's not letting go.
Yes. I mean, I can just continue not replying to any of his phone messages that he leaves me. I don't get any of the texts anymore because I blocked them. Okay. But, I mean, I can just keep the status quo and keep just ignoring everything.
It doesn't sound like he's going to quit. With your own satisfaction, did you let it be very clear that you are moving out of the relationship and he goes his way, you go your way, there will be no more contacts? Can you be comfortable that you did that?
I absolutely did. I told him specifically, I will not reply to any more of your texts. And then that's when he started calling. And I have not. I have not replied to anything since I did that. Okay. But I feel very confident that what I told him was how I felt, and this is it.
You were clear.
We're done.
So you don't have to reiterate it. Because the reason I asked that question is, in fact, if you didn't make it that clear, you make it clear one more time. But you already did that. And what is clear is that he's not accepting that. His view is. And again, I don't know him, but I'm going to speculate that you sized up this relationship and said, this ain't a good one. This ain't good. I don't want to get mixed up with this guy. And you made your decision. And this is kind of confirming what you did, right? Because you said, no, I better withdraw from this relationship. And you're finding out, he's pushing hard here. So this is telling me that I made the right decision, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So there's two levels, as I said. One is, how do you have no contact? Well, you have no contact. Two is, how do you make him understand? You probably don't. You tried. So at this point, to continue to respond to him, unless you want to, go ahead. But if you don't, then you more or less just hope that he ultimately accepts it. I hope I'm wrong about this, Pat. I hope I'm wrong about this. So far, he's tried indirect communication. Has he shown up at your house yet?
No, he has not. However, he did maybe 6-7 years ago. He has done that, but he has not shown up at the house.
I wouldn't be totally surprised if he did.
No, I would not. And he lives close by my daughter, so he's talked to her before. And I just told her, and this has been a while ago, but I just told her, just say, you know, my mom's not interested. But and it's not like we had anything more than a you know, texting, you know, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But and I did, he did request to meet me about 10 years ago, and he did that through my mom. And so my mom and sisters were there, and we had a short little visit, and I haven't seen him since.
Okay. But it's kind of, he's really running with this, especially given that this wasn't a tight relationship. He's really running with this. I think if you're comfortable enough, you simply just kind of hope that it fades away like it did last time. Good luck on this. It always makes me nervous when somebody just doesn't accept it and keeps pushing.
Hello and welcome to The Crux of the Matter. I'm Father Wade Menezes. If there's one doctrinal teaching of the Catholic Church that stands out particularly strong in this modern day and age, a teaching that everybody seems to know, both Catholics and non-Catholics alike, whether they agree with it or not, it's the teaching that priestly ordination is reserved to men alone. But this time-honored doctrine, held by the Church since the time of Christ and His apostles, in no way militates against the dignity of women, their natural gifts or vocation, nor is the fact that women are ineligible to receive the sacrament of holy orders to be viewed as a reflection against their universal call to holiness, to which all persons are called. In modern times, the Church has repeatedly and definitively reiterated the reasons why the sacrament of holy orders can be received only by men. Pope John Paul II, in his apostolic letter on reserving priestly ordination to men alone, quotes Pope Paul VI in stating some of these reasons, including the example recorded in the sacred scriptures of Christ choosing his apostles only from among men, the constant practice of the Church, which has imitated Christ in choosing only men, and her living teaching authority, which has consistently held that the exclusion of women from the priesthood is in accordance with God's plan for his Church. In actual fact, then, the Church concludes that she is not authorized to admit women to priestly ordination. In other words, the Church herself cannot change this teaching. She has not the authority to do so. And this is because the Church recognizes herself to be bound, as it were, by this choice made by the Lord Himself, a choice, mind you, which He made freely, since He shows Himself time and time again in the Gospels to not have been subject to the prevailing customs or social conditions of His time. This has been The Crux of the Matter, and I'm Father Wade Menezes. God bless you.
Little 1962 sitcom music there. I'm always wondering what's a topic for the next book. Well, Mary from Independence, Missouri, apparently wants to give me an idea. Hi, Mary.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
I have an idea. Well, I'm 85-year-old great-grandmother, and I've seen so much in the last few years of young children being traumatized by school shootings, by church shootings, being sexually mistreated and things like that. And I was wondering if you would be interested in a handbook for parents on how to handle trauma with their young children.
Well, it depends on several things here, Mary. One is, what is the trauma? Another is, what's the kid's makeup? You know, some kids handle trauma pretty well. They truly do. They're resilient. Other kids are a little more emotionally fragile. I have written a book that addresses some of these matters from a prevention standpoint, especially given what you asked about, which is the kids looking all around you and seeing all this stuff. It's called Raising upright kids in an upside down world. It's a pretty big seller. I was kind of pleasantly surprised at the, they tell me at EWTN that it's in their top 10, and all the other ones are pretty much Mother Angelica. So I'm feeling pretty good company there.
And it
talks about how do you basically protect your kids from some of this stuff. What kinds of things can you do regarding giving them a childhood?
I have a great granddaughter that's 9 years old. Her parents are divorced. He walked out on them when she was 8 days old because she cried and kept him awake. He has not wanted any kind of visitation to speak of throughout her life until recently. And he wanted her for a weekend. And he...
Well, apparently she's done crying.
But, well, I will go back a little bit. Prior to my granddaughter marrying this jerk, he came on to her 13-year-old sister pretty strongly. So my granddaughter was pretty hesitant to let her little 9-year-old girl go spend the weekend with this man.
Mm-hmm.
Whom she doesn't know. He's only seen her maybe 10 or 12 times in her life. But she still let the child go spend the weekend. And he did make moves on the child.
Ouch! I mean, I was going to say, yeah. this is a risky thing. Okay, so you're asking more particularly with that kind of... that kind of trauma for a kid. There are all kinds of books out there like that.
Right, but now my granddaughter, the mother of this child, has a degree in psychology. So she knows everything about everything, you know? She won't listen to anything.
Wait a minute, does she have a bachelor's degree in psychology?
I think she has a master's, but she never did go get licensed.
Okay.
She's working as a counselor, so she's just knows it all.
Okay.
And I thought, well, I don't think I can. I tried to talk to her one time, saw I was getting nowhere, so I shut my mouth and I stayed out of it, you know. But it was a thought, you know, that parents might look at as kind of a handbook type thing of like, my child was a school shooting. What signs should I look for? That kind
yeah,
of
there's
thing,
a, there's a lot saying. Of stuff out there, Mary, already like that. You
well,
probably have to do
I
some searching.
I haven't looked for it because I'm an old woman. You know, I don't.
You're a pup, Mary. Come on, you're just a pup.
Well. You tell my back that.
Your back ain't listening, huh? Your back and your knees ain't listening.
That's right.
Well, I think your concern is beautiful, dear. And again, when you got somebody that says, don't talk to me, you're an older person, you're not with it, I'm with it, I'm educated, sometimes they can be the hardest people to listen to any kind of feedback from anybody.
And... kind of the latest report I got on the little girl is that from her aunt, she spent the Christmas holidays, the two sisters and the little girl spent Christmas together, and she said the child has really, she's scared of everything now, you know.
Doesn't surprise me. Doesn't surprise me. I'm going to have to let you go to on past break, but I do appreciate the call, Mary. Thanks for thinking of me and for putting that book idea in my hopper. This is Dr. Ray.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
The Catholic Church teaches that Jesus Christ is literally and wholly present, body and blood, soul and divinity, under the appearances of bread and wine. Feeding 5,000 from a boy's 5 barley loaves and 2 fish, as recorded in John chapter 6, is quite a miracle. Yet the next day, Jesus downplays it in verse 27. Do not work for the food that perishes, but for the food that endures for eternal life, which the Son of Man will give you. Likewise, God's provision of manna to the Israelites in the desert was also a great miracle, yet Jesus similarly downplays it in verse 49. Your ancestors ate the manna in the wilderness, but they died. This is the bread that comes down from heaven, so that one may eat of it and not die. Jesus is clearly stating that his Eucharist is greater than both of these amazing miracles, and the Catholic Church absolutely takes him at his word. Examining the truths of the Catholic faith, this is faithforensics.org.
The following program is brought to you in part by MyCatholicWill.com. Surveys show that more than half of Americans do not have a will. At MyCatholicWill.com, it takes as little as 15 minutes to write your will and secure a legacy of faith. MyCatholicWill.com is the exclusive online destination for creating a Catholic will. The process of writing a will is simple and now more accessible than ever. MyCatholicWill.com, a legacy of faith for those you love.
Nice to have you with me. Let's go to your calls. If again, to reiterate, if you are on the line at the end of the program, you are first up in any program in the future, all the way out to the end of the world, or the end of this program's run, whichever comes first, or the end of my life, or yours, into the future. Kathy from Missouri is calling. Got a 14-year-old son. Says he struggled with mental health. That's pretty broad. Could be a lot of reasons, a lot of kinds, a lot of aspects to what it is. But I will say this, that never before in our keeping records have teenagers been so discontent, so unhappy, so anxiety prone, and so suicidal in their ideation as this most recent generation. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
What's going on with this young man that he's just so, whatever it is, unhappy or anxious or frustrated, yeah. Whatever?
You know, we noticed these tendencies many, many years ago, so this isn't the exact first episode, but basically recently, just last night, we had another talk, and I asked him those hard questions through my youth mental health training for myself. You have to ask the hard question, and I did. And he said yes. He's been thinking about it and recently, and so I started digging. Is there a plan? Is there, how would you do those things? And when he told me he didn't have the guts to do it, because
that's a good sign.
Knew, right, because he knew of the pain that would leave his family in. He also was scared, but he did use the line, he's just a complete failure in life. And he said, I'm not going to amount to anything in life anyways, so why not be useful and go ahead and
get to the place where is he getting these ideas? I mean, obviously, he's growing up in a loving home with people who care about him. So where is this coming from?
So he struggled with low self-esteem, low confidence. He has been diagnosed 3 times from 3 different caregivers, whether it's therapist or a behavior center in Children's Mercy, with social anxiety. No one ever identifies depression because he doesn't open up to them at all about his low self-esteem and his anxiousness of his performance. He's never used the word perfectionism. I have, but he defines it easily, that he feels pressure to be perfect. And so his father and I do not care about mistakes whatsoever and do not care about being perfect, but we do care about effort, work ethic, hustle, attitude, and anything you're going to do, whether it's sports, singing, serving at church, whatever it is, school, whatever it is, you're going to have effort. And so it feels as it's a sports And it's always been that way. This isn't new. He's been in sports since he's been eight, on competitive basketball and baseball and some football leagues. And so we've went through some challenges in the past with his performances, what he feels is a complete failure, whether it's just a minor mistake, but he takes it into a low self-esteem area and that he's worthless. And so recently we do put pressure on him about what I just said, the attitude, effort, and hustle, whatever you do. And so it's recent. I feel like it's the sports. He tells me that that's the stress in his life. And that
he'd identify that as the main factor that he's not living up to.
Yes, recently. And again, the recent conversation. Yeah. With
flits about,
night,
flits about to various things. You mentioned here to our call screamer that he says he went to therapy or he's in therapy.
He's not currently. He started in second grade.
Wow.
And COVID hits, and okay. that doctor, you know, they wanted medicine then, and we just said, let's let him get into his body first. Okay. We're very in tune parents, not perfect parents, but we're in tune, and COVID hits, so that therapy stops. We find another therapist he liked, and they work on strategies, anxiety strategies. She also didn't think that he was in immediate danger 2 years ago.
Why did that therapy end then?
It is distance, an hour and a half away.
Sure.
We
okay.
also started a health situation where we found out he and I are gluten-free. We both have Hashimoto, so our diet had changed. And we eliminated some things in our diet, and we did see behavior being more positive. And so that therapist felt like since he was in the positive, improving in some
are
of
you
those
saying,
areas.
I'm going to cut you short here because you're going to get cut off by the end of the show. Are you saying that... he's slipping back into some of his more negative views?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Well, at this point, especially if he's tap dancing around suicidal ideation, you might want to tell him, son, we can't have you thinking like that. Mm-hmm. I know you say you wouldn't do it because of the religion or because of the pain it would cause us, and certainly those are big reasons, but... I don't even want you thinking about that. And what bugs me is that you're so down about these kinds of things, which should never have the power to bring you down like this. Never, ever. Yeah. Frustration? Yeah. Feeling like you failed at something? Yeah. But the idea that you are putting down your whole self because of this is way out of bounds thinking. And so what I want to do is I want you, we're going to go together and we're going to talk to someone about what it is in your mind. Cognitive behavioral therapy would be real good for your son. What it is that you are doing, concluding that the fact that, okay, so you had a bad outing at a sport and now you're a failure, or whatever it is that he's interpreting about his performance that he's extrapolating to his personhood. You got to break that connection. And a good therapist would do that. A good therapist would say, okay, son, let's talk about how you've tagged yourself a failure on the basis of what. And it may be, too, Kathy, that he may just have the mindset that the glass is half full. I mean, it's just the way he's wired kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he's prone to whatever kind of frustrations and deficiencies that happen to bop his way. He overinterprets them.
Mm-hmm.
It's awful and terrible and horrible that, you know, I had a bad game and they pulled me out in the third quarter. Oh, gosh, yep. I don't even know if I should be playing basketball kind of thing.
That's exactly right. That's what his thoughts are, yep.
So given that, I think I'd be clear with him. I'd say, look, son, you are of infinite value to me, and I'm not going to sit here and think, well, he isn't gonna follow through on anything like that. I believe you won't, but I don't even like those thoughts bugging you. That's what distresses me, the fact that you even have to ward off those kinds of thoughts. That bothers me, and that you do have to ward off those kinds of thoughts tells me that it's your thinking that needs fixed, corrected, because you don't have to feel this way.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing in your life that says you're a failure other than the way you're interpreting things.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say, okay, we're going to go talk to somebody. And then after three or four sessions, which by the way, when I do talk to adolescents, after about two or three sessions, they go, yeah, I'm fine. I'm okay. I don't want to go to boo. It's typically what they do. Thanks, Kathy, for the call.
Yep.
Good luck. God bless you, dear. Claire, you call back. You'll be first up. This is Dr. A. Andrew's going to tell me 20 seconds like he always does. Oh, 10 seconds. All right. Walk with God all the way to eternity.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.